The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 28th of November, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering the following stocks: Amigo, Go Ahead Group, and Virgin Money. All have news out today. And Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain, and cryptocurrency news. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top 10 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 10 most liked RNSs. In fact, I give you top 5. You can see the top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And don't forget, if you receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download at your favourite app store, at your local app store, whatever that is, then you like the contents of that RNS, hit the thumbs up button. There's a thumbs up button on the app there on each RNS. If you hit that, and of course, if it gets the most popular liked, then it gets more publicity. Basically, it gets shared on the podcast and also gets on that list there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Very good, thank you. Very good.
What's your thoughts then? I mean, are we going to have an end of year Santa rally, you reckon?
We've done pretty well in sort of second half of August, September, October and November, haven't we? Santa's kind of come a bit early, judging by the fact that around where I live, there's a few people putting up Christmas lights and whatnot. They're reflecting that already.
Haven't you got yours up?
No, goodness, in our household, 1st of December is the absolute earliest. We just discussed this last week, didn't we, in terms carols, no nothing, no Christmas songs until 1st of December. It's full Monty for 1st of December, but not until then. Goodness gracious,
I had to literally argue and put my foot down on my kids, not putting the tree up. We put up on the 25th of November. They wanted a week earlier than that. I said, no. The minimum I'll do is a month before Christmas. That's it.
We're hardcore here. 1st of December, nothing moves until then, which I think is appropriate. And obviously it all comes down on the 1st of January, so nice and neat to remember. But there you go. I mean, Santa rallies, look, it's with the UK, of course, there's a bit of a curveball this year, and the curveball is the election in a couple of weeks' time. And we've all seen the polling, we've all seen the estimations. I guess there'll always be a bit of added excitement in the last couple of weeks, that's guaranteed. But I think that is going to be mildly influential to the UK market, particularly for the more domestic focused shares, for obvious reasons. Clearly there are some differences in the major political parties in terms of how that might impact business, certainly market valuations and the like. So I think that's a little bit of a curveball, but I'm actually thinking that the line of least resistance probably for the balance of this year is up, although I can't get away from the notion that we've seen so much juice and excitement in the last couple of months that we may have a diluted Santa rally, with possibly the UK leading the way on the basis that we've actually got a big event, i.e. an election, whilst other people are just kind of, just sort of slide into Christmas more quietly. We'll see. I think all to play for, look, bottom line is, let's face it, we've got two things. One is that you're still getting big pickup yields on equity bonds. Now, so long as can pay cash flows and dividends and stuff like that, that has got to be good and supportive. Number two, we've still got global fund managers being a bit ambivalent for many obvious reasons towards UK equities. And locally, that's got to be a good thing as well, because I kind of feel as if a lot of people, if we get the other side of the election with a little bit of Brexit clarity, you're going to see a lot of strategy type people saying, oh, the UK is going to be a good place to be for 2020. So I think lots to play for, as always.
Yeah, I think what it hangs on, is a hung parliament or not? And I think if Conservatives get the majority, then we won't have a hung parliament. Then I think we'll have a good rally, a really good rally. If we go back to a hung parliament, people are just going to say, well, how many more years of arguing in the House of Commons? So, you know, it's yes. that, and it's that impasse. We've got to, and you keep saying get Brexit done, and it's just the first stage of Brexit, of course, but at least it moves it on. As it is, like we say, we've got, there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines, you know, waiting to see what's going on here. So if we get, and whether, you know, you vote for, I don't care who you vote for, but let's be honest, Labour aren't going to get a majority. Now, if they come in, they'll probably have to form an alliance, maybe with the SNP. Now, the SNP said the other day, so they won't pick up the phone to Labour unless they agree they can have a Scottish referendum next year. So that'll be, and also there's another referendum on the EU. So that'll be two referendums next year. That is the same. So the only way we're going to have a massive rally is if the Conservatives get a majority. That way, at least there's a clear way through. At least we're advancing, moving one step forward rather than just going nowhere, you know? And I think there will be a massive rally in that. And regardless of what people think, I would vote Conservative, but I mean, I just think any other way, we're going nowhere at the moment. Just, again, we'll have another couple of years of arguing, you know?
That's right. And, you know, obviously, if you do get some semblance of Brexit clarity, then what you would expect to see is the pound to go up. Yep. Now, when the pound goes up, you know, that's good news if you're going on holiday, clearly, but or at least an overseas holiday. But for the market, the way that impacts is quite interesting because, of course, that will positively help domestic companies much more than those earning their money from foreign ventures. Mm. So, again, that will split the market, and we've seen a little bit of that already. But my instinct is that there's more to come on that particular theme. So, bottom line is, you know, buying an index, maybe, but I think there's more remunerative future in buying and selling stocks and being a stock picker and active money management. That feels to me much more thematically the right way to be in 2020, as it sort of has been in 2019. You know, we've seen some quite interesting rotations in the last few months, you know, above and beyond what the headline indices have done. So more of that, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Stocks, what are you looking at?
Well, we've got to start. There's a couple of big movers in the sort of the broader FTSE 350 today. First is Amigo, which is a very controversial stock for many reasons. You've probably seen the adverts on TV. They do all of these sort of, you have these sort of guarantor loans. You know, maybe you go with a parent or a friend or somebody who stands behind you and says, yeah, I'll guarantee that their loan. The trouble is, and my big problem with the company is that sounds very worthy and nice, and you'd have thought there's a small premium for that service. But, you know, Amigo lends money at 50% annualized rates, which just seems to be crazy when, frankly, you know, if you want to have some kind of structure with a person, you'd have thought you could have done that a lot more cheaply. But anyway, very controversial company. The FCA and other regulators have been sniffing around this whole area, and they're actually, the company came out with a disclosure on that today saying that yes, that there have been some sort of observations about that space made by the FCA, which obviously that they will look to employ fully. But kind of very interesting numbers at two levels. Number one, if you're somebody who just looks at it at a headline level, you'll say, my goodness, you know, you've got customer growth, you've got loan book growth, you've got hence revenue growth. And, you know, that ticks the box. And depending on which metric you use, that's between high single digit and sort of 15%. Year-on-year growth, you know, all sounds great. However, you dig a little bit lower, you've got an impairment to revenue ratio of 31% on this company, which is just absolute head in hands kind of as an insight, because what that's telling you is getting on for a third of the loans just are potentially impaired.
Yeah.
Which tells you that they are scrabbling around people who unfortunately probably should not be borrowing money, number one, and the fact that they're borrowing it at such high rates is obviously, you know, unsurprisingly very negatively impacting them and hence causing impairments and other issues. I mean, what a crazy business, I have to say. It superficially, if you look at it at face value, you could argue this company is on, you know, a low single digits multiple, P multiple. But I think the trouble is FCA have already been sniffing around a bit and made some suggestions. The moral compass around this one feels very mixed. And personally, despite the fact that some people will argue it's a value stock, I can't bring myself to touch it. So I'm afraid Amigo, you know, the obvious line is no friend of mine. But the shares are up 15-18% today. They've had an absolute shocker year today. I think we're 250p, something like that, at the start of the year. We're 60 odd pence yesterday, pushing up nearer towards 70 today. Yeah, it's a challenging shot. I wouldn't touch it, and certainly at those rates of interest, I wouldn't go anywhere near borrowing money off them.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because, like I said, they were for the full year, 2019. Their impairment rate was 23.3%. That's increased now by 33% to 31%. So they were close to a quarter of people not paying back. Now they're close to a third of people not paying back. And where's that going? Yeah. The other Christmas is going to get worse, I think. So that's going to be a bit worrying, isn't it?
But the thing is, just it is worrying too, I would say, when you've got the profitability of the company going up. Yeah. If you kind of read it at the headline level, and what that's telling you is, a business model which has potentially that level of impairments, but is having people borrow money at 50% APR or basically the thick end of that, is a worryingly profitable if people pay the money back, but sort of very questionably structured in terms of just the level of those monies, that the interest being charged and everything else. I see the risk on this one being that the regulators step more aggressively in over time and say, look, guys, this is, as we've seen, it's not as if this area is not without precedent. Obviously, there's reasons why Wonga is no longer in the market. There's reasons why Provident Financial had all those issues and challenges and whatever else. This is an extremely controversial area. Yeah, and I come back to my first point, really, which was that if you're thinking about borrowing money at these sorts of levels of interest, think very hard about it, because ultimately it probably isn't worth it.
No. It's funny, I was on the treadmill this morning running, and I saw an advert for Argos, and they did an advert for their credit card. And they said, if you take out a credit card, you get 20% off your next purchase. And then look at the APR, it was 30%. That's what it is. It's like, literally, if you don't pay back within a year, you're going to get, charge more. So,
we laugh about it. And debt is that silent killer. Yeah. It's the silent killer in the global economy, big picture. We're just fortunate at the moment, bond yields are so low. I mean, it's kind of interesting. Here's an indication of the margin. If I'm reading it correctly, Amigo can borrow money. They sort of source their own monies to sort of lend to people at about 4%. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a feel. Of course, there's extra costs of running their business or whatever, but that's why they can be profitable on such massive impairment levels. That just sounds, some people will be attracted to that business model. For me, I just don't think it's sustainable. I think regulation will kick in and there'll be problems.
Yeah. Okay, cool. What's next, Chris?
So next up, I think more interestingly, another company that's up sort of 15-20% today is Virgin Money. So sort of another financial space player, but perhaps in the slightly more conventional areas of sort of mortgages and savings products and everything else. Now, Virgin Money, this is an interesting set of numbers. And I think the reason why the shares are up thick end of 20% as we speak is because They merged with the Gladstone Bank, CYBG, not so long ago. So this is their first attempt at kind of like a pro forma-y kind of combination sort of set of numbers. And there's lots of sort of red ink and weirdisms around it as well. But bottom line is, they announced over the summer that PPI had caught them out again, and they were having to take some big write-downs. This was more the Clydesdale side, and that really hurt the share price. I mean, if I recall, the Virgin Money share price got down not far off a pound. It really did have a real tonking in the late summer period. The numbers today are not particularly sparkling. Most things are moving in the right direction in terms of sort of assets and deposits and lending and mortgages and stuff like that. So that's all okay. Not particularly exciting, but okay. I think more importantly is that whilst they said, look, we've still got all these PPI things, and we had to increase our impairments, we had to suspend the dividend and stuff like that, it hasn't seemingly got any worse. And they're reiterating the sort of the revised down numbers they talked about at their big capital markets day. So I think that's what's helped the shares. And looking at it in a sort of a value basis, they were trading before the bounce today around about 0.5 times book. Now, you know, book value is a funny old concept and certainly is by no means gospel, but that strikes me as quite low. And they bounced off that low today. So I think there's a bit of correct kind of value reappraisal going on here. For me, would I chase the shares here? I still think they're probably a little bit too cheap. That would be my guess. And there'll be opportunities bringing together Virgin and Clydesdale, etc., under the Virgin Money brand. I think that what this does, it highlights to me that, you know, going back to what we talked about 10 minutes ago, if you do get a little bit of clarity post the election, the banks, and I'm thinking here a bit more of sort of the Lloyds, the RBSs, maybe the Barclays and stuff, are probably too cheap. I mean, they're generally reasonably yieldy, but they're also trading at sort of sub-book levels, and I think that's a bit rude. And I think the relative value is probably now no longer with Virgin post the bounce. It's probably a little bit more, again, with the kind of the Lloyds, the RBSs and the Barclays of this world, which are also trading sub-book, and I think there's a bit of value in them.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. Anything else, Chris?
Well, quick final one on back to the buses and trains. We talked a couple of weeks ago about a couple of local difficulties at First Group, and I see the shares there have kind of done a V-shape since. You may recall that the management have got a plan to sort of break the company up effectively or realise value, and Activist shareholders got the same plan. They came up with some numbers which sort of disappointed the market and worried the market, but the strategy still seems in place, and that share is recovering off of their challenges of a couple of weeks ago. One of their sector peers, Go Ahead Group, came up with numbers this morning, a little pre-close statement, to be honest. What they said was quite interesting. They said that the buses in the UK, London was going quite well. Regional buses, a little bit of extra cost, impacting levels of profitability and everything there. Rail business in the UK going all right, slightly shabby, a few operational issues in their German rail business, but net, not too bad. And when I last looked, the shares were sort of edging up slightly, reflecting that. 4.5% yield on this one. I would say probably a fairly fully valued company. Certainly First Group seems a bit cheaper in the sort of bus and rail and transport space, but a solid old name. 4.5% yield can't be sniffed at. And one for sort of maybe the train spotters and yield hunters alike.
Yeah, do you know what? Looking at the chart, it's very interesting. Cause it is, trending up, but it's come some quite sort of big sways up and down. If you look at the 200-day moving average, it is going nice from bottom left to top right. And it's bounced off that quite nicely. But when it comes off and goes lower, you think, whoa, hang on, this is a bit of a volatile share, but then it bounces back off the 200-day moving average. But today's, it's just gone into negative territory. But it'd be interesting to see if it breaks significantly below that 200-day moving average. I'd worry, because it hasn't done that for a while now. So
I don't think it's quite a heavy share price, 22-odd quid, something like that. And number two, I don't think there's that much liquidity in it. You know, for a company that's a reasonable size, been a member of the FTSE 350 for a while, I think it's reasonably thinly traded. So, you know, that combination, heavy share price, slightly thinly traded, it can lead to sort of a bit of natural vol. But I do agree. I think if it gets beyond these sorts of levels, you go look at that sort of 5-year chart or something, you've got the sort of the 25 quid area that it has previously traded at. So for me, the major attraction is probably the dividend. 4.5% isn't bad and does look sensibly covered and everything else. I think that's probably the major attraction today. I think the sort of the total return story is a bit stronger in something like First Group, but not too bad. You know, it fits into this feeling that, you know, you can find slightly more domestic focused UK companies, opportunities which are going to do somewhat better than the bank account in 2020. This would probably be one of them, I'd say.
Okay, marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next weekie.
Sounds plan.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me right now on the podcast is Glenn Goodman. He's an author, and he talks about mainly cryptocurrencies. Are you writing any more books, Glenn? Or is it just the one there, The Crypto Trader? Are you any
plans? I've got a few little books in my head, Justin, but no, they're not on paper yet. Just the one, just The Crypto Trader, which is on actual papers, pieces of paper. The rest of them are just just ideas, pie in the sky at the moment, but one day they'll come to fruition.
Yeah, well,
don't you worry.
This book here, you know, including, well, in fact, not including the index, but 237 pages of sheer quality. Bitcoin tradery. Okay, and so there we are. So, Glenn, and I tell you what, I'm glad I got out of the Bitcoin a while back. I got out of about 8,500.
Yeah.
Because it did touch, I think, 6,500 recently, 6,500 euros, dollars we're talking about, per Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I've said, you know, now it's down in a downtrend, and it's not looking any nicer. You may have some, you know, aggressive rallies, but I don't believe they're playing into uptrend at all. And if you look at it, right, if you look at this, it's two moving averages you should look at here for a longer-term trade, and that is a 200-day moving average and the 125. Look at the 125. It's now crossing. We've had the 50-day cross the 200-day moving average. That's death cross. Now we're getting the 125 bending over and crossing over the 200-day moving average. Now, last time
I'm going to say something a bit controversial, which is that the moving averages, I think, work a bit differently with cryptocurrency than they do with everything
I'm coming to that.
Oh, sorry.
Prince. Now, the last two times it's done that, it's had a prolonged downtrend. That's all I'm saying. So, previously when it's happened, because it doesn't happen very often. It's only happened, last time it happened was April 2018, after that big spike up, and it came all the way down. And it went from 10,000 there. They did it, it crossed about 10,000, and of course, it went down to like 3,000. And then previously to that, let's scroll back a bit to the chart. Previously to that, it happened, where was it? There we are. It happened in, when was this? July 2014, Bitcoin then was at like $600, or no, it was, $500, and it went down to literally $200. So that's only twice it's ever happened before, and so I think that's, you know, precedence there. It's a bit worrying. I think I'm just saying it looks like everything's bending over. I mean, it could snap back and rally quickly, of course, with a massive halving happening next year, which is a good milestone, I suppose, for it. But at the moment, it's looking a bit sickly, isn't it?
Well, we've had a short-term rally the past couple of days. You may have noticed what technical analysts call a head and shoulders bottom, a sort of a pattern formed.
BS, really.
Well, you say that, but
I did say
actually,
that, yeah.
I took. Yeah, well, I'm going to contradict it because in my book, I cite a number of academic studies that have rigorously tested the head and shoulders. And even though the pattern itself looks kind of silly, it's not something you would expect to work. It sounds like something that's made up. It looks like something that's made up. Actually, for reasons unknown, it does have validity and you can successfully trade off the head and shoulders. There are lots of other technical analysis that really are pure rubbish and that have been tested numerous times and just shown to not work. But head and shoulders, along with support and resistance lines and triangle shapes and a few other things, have kind of been shown to be tradable, to make you a profit if you trade off them. So that's one of the things I use as a result because it works, basically. So the head and shoulders bottom formed. And so I did buy off the back of that, and I made a bit of profit off the back of that trade. I mean, as we speak, the head and shoulders only broke out sort of about 12 hours before we spoke. So it's a bit early to be drawing any strong conclusions about whether it will have longer term upward potential. But it did, you know, the Bitcoin broke upwards, shot upwards by almost $1,000 in total over the course of a few hours. And we'll see if it's got legs. So as I say, I bought it, but my fingers on the sell, hovering over the sell button, because
as you quite rightly say, we are
in a long-term downtrend. So this could just be another kind of little false dawn.
Obviously, you know, bear market rallies can be very powerful, but they don't play into the uptrend. And has it got legs? Well, we need a body first, because we've got head and shoulders. You need a body in between the legs, surely. Otherwise, it's not going to be supportive.
I mean, you know, I'm not hugely optimistic about
that's just biology, though. That's biology. If you've got a head and shoulders and you want to survive, and you've got legs, you need a body in between. But this is not technical analysis, this is biology. I like this. So you say, the head and shoulders pattern resembles, guess what? A human head and shoulders. Yes, I know that's silly, and I'm starting to sound a bit like one of those people who thinks the cloud outside their window looks like Elvis. But head and shoulders is just a nice shorthand way of describing a relatively complex pattern. Empirically, it's one of the most reliable patterns with extensive academic evidence supporting it to you, and it's you. But listen to this. So there's lots of fun.
Oh, I've suddenly realised you're reading out of my book.
Yeah, that's your book.
I thought, God, that sounds familiar.
I tell you like what, he's
mirroring my thoughts there.
Fair play, you've got some references here to the people: Osler, Chang, 1995, and Shaw.
Yeah. Osler's great.
Well, you haven't read all those books, have you? You haven't read all those.
No, they're academic papers. I haven't read the papers. Yeah. Obviously quite turgid stuff, quite academic, but nonetheless, the methodology works. You know, these are professors at universities and that kind of thing who carry out these studies. So
I've got a little red bar, right? A red bar of resistance. Now, and you can trace this back to like May when we first had this rally up, 2019 May. And there's support and resistance around this level. And I'm saying it has to get above pretty much 7,900, almost back of 8,000. Really to have to push, you know, to get really going, to get this rally really going, get some momentum behind it, you know, and get back into that range. Because at the moment, we are in a resistance zone. Otherwise, it doesn't get back to that 8,000 level. That's resistance, and it's going to bang its head there and go lower again. But
And the sort of the big breakout, because we're still in this downward. A long downward channel that we've talked about we've been talking about it for weeks now. The price of Bitcoin is kind of falling slowly within this huge channel that's lasted since about July. And what the channel is, you know, is kind of like a downward sloping pipe, and the price shoots up and shoots down and shoots up and shoots down within that channel. And this is another one of those shooting upwards phases. But unless it breaks through, currently we're looking at about 9,000 or just below 9,000. If it breaks through that, then that's the upward boundary of the channel. And then things could be very exciting. You know, it could signal the beginning of a proper new upward trend. But until we get there, then you're quite right. It's just it's still just pie in the sky.
Yeah. Marvelous stuff. So what are you up to? What have you been doing? You mentioned before you go into the BBC. What are you doing there?
Yeah. I'm off to the BBC today. Wasn't that in Alan Partridge? What's her name? His assistant. She sang some song in a Scottish way about he's off to the BBC. Oh, never mind. Yeah. Look it up on YouTube. Anyway, so... I'm off to the BBC to do an interview today about digital currency because of the announcement by one of the members of the board of the European Central Bank that now they're looking into developing a central bank digital currency. So now you've got China developing its own digital currency. You've got Mark Carney talking about how we need possibly a central bank digital currency. Now the European Central Bank are probably going to be developing one. And even the Americans, even Jerome Powell at the Fed, has talked about the possibility of them developing one. They're certainly looking into it. Anyway, it sounds like the ECB are further down the line, though, which is why I'm going to be interviewed about it. It's, you know, there's something exciting happening here. He says, a digital currency of this sort could take a variety of forms, the benefits and costs of which the ECB and other central banks are currently investigating. And he is terrified... I'm putting that word into his mouth, but that was the impression I got from his speech, that he's quite scared that Europe is being left behind in the kind of currency development battle. I mean, the reason I'm so into this whole kind of digital currency thing and the whole future of money is because it is changing really, really rapidly. And I don't think people are quite aware of how quickly it's changing, how quickly we're moving towards what may turn out to be a cashless society for a start. And there are all these different alternatives for what future money will look like. And the one thing they all have in common is it doesn't look anything like money has done in the past. It's all just online, purely online in one form or another. And the question is, will it be a central bank owned digital currency that controls things, or will it be an independent one that's kind of the market leader like Bitcoin, or will it be controlled by a corporation like Facebook's Libra?
Well, the thing is, right, I don't understand the difference. There's no point having, at the moment, I hate cash and coins. I hate it. For years, I've been hating it. And, you know, and I, for a long time, I thought, why can't we just do this online? Why do we need, you know, paper and metal in our, jangling about in our pocket? It's ridiculous. It's like something of the yesteryear, isn't it? It really is old-fashioned. And now, pretty much, I'd say 90-odd% of my transactions are digital. That means Apple Pay or PayPal. So that, to me, that's digital payments. So Why are people creating cryptocurrencies? Well, in my mind, the only difference is because it's decentralized. Now, if you're going to have the ECB owning a currency that's digital, you know, there's no difference between what they do now. They're just going to, you know, they're just going to basically, you know, expand the balance sheet, you know, expand supply. It'll be inflation, and so I don't understand what the difference is. Surely, the difference is the decentralization. That's the thing, isn't it?
Well, I think so. I would like to think so, but the decentralization is not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah, no, hang on a second. That's why Bitcoin was invented. It was like, yeah. You know, at the moment, it's a, you know, money is based on a trust system, and central banks, you trust central banks. But as we know, maybe it's misplaced because all they've been doing is devaluing the currencies, printing more. And like I said, roughly in 1985, right to, was it in 30 years? So I think it was so in 2015. In that time, if you'd owned 40 grand in cash in 1985, that's now worth 10 grand in 2015. That's how much has been devalued by the central banks. So trust is lost. That's the same we'll hear about. The Bank of England, not the worst. They're like, you've got the Japanese. It's like a ridiculous amount of devaluation. So that's why trust has been lost. That's why, you know, Satoshi Nagasaki set up this system where you don't need trust, because the ledger of several other people verifying every transaction, and of course they've hard supplied the supply. So that, to me, in my mind, they're just doing the same as they did with normal currency, but now they call it digital currency. So I mean, there's not really any trust there at all. So I don't understand.
No, you're quite right, yeah.
I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand really the point of them doing it.
What's interesting is that just this week, PayPal's chief executive, Dan Schulman, has revealed that he owns Bitcoin. That it's the only cryptocurrency he's invested in. He is a Bitcoin believer. And of course, PayPal is kind of part of, even though it's a relatively new company and a relatively modern way of exchanging money between different parties, it's still kind of tied into that old economy, as it were. It's still, for example, tied into existing banking structures. Yeah. And I mean, what we found this week is that there are kind of some industries, for example, that I was reading about that are really totally excluded from traditional payment structures. And Pornhub, which is, I think, the world's biggest.
You're a big fan of that, yeah. Well, don't tell me you're saying it like you've never heard of it, Glenn.
I've never heard of Pornhub. No. What can I tell you? A hub of porn? I don't know. I don't even know what porn is.
What a classy title that is, though. It's a hub just for porn. It's like, who came up with that? Pornhub. It is. I mean, if you haven't heard of Pornhub, you probably haven't heard of Google, because it is like the biggest, isn't it? I mean, it is the thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they, you know, being the biggest site in the world, they have hundreds of thousands of pornography artists who they need to pay money to, who they need to pay royalties to. Mm-hmm. And what's emerged is that they're being shut out of the banking system almost altogether by you know, all the main operators, the normal ones who we deal with, won't deal with some of the pornography industry. And so as a result, they find it very difficult to pay their performers. So now they're turning to cryptocurrencies to try and transfer the money that needs to be transferred. But you see, because cryptocurrency is at such an early stage of development still, and is a little bit clunky, some of the adult performers are complaining about it and saying, for example, let's see, I had an interview here from a porn performer, Pornhub performer, Shyla Jennings, who said, "Crypto."
Oh, I know Shyla. Oh, hang on, no, sorry.
She says, "Crypto personal portal, lol." Lol, I don't understand what that even is. I'm cool with just direct deposit into my bank account. Yeah. Well, she may be cool with it, but unfortunately, the entire payments industry seems to decide what's moral and what's not moral and who they'll deal with and who they won't. So as a result, Pornhub's had to turn to cryptocurrencies to try and pay her. But, you know, she, like many people, is finding it hard to kind of navigate the logistics of actually setting up various crypto accounts and all, you know, all the stuff I describe in my book, basically. You know, it's it's not as simple as just accepting some money into your bank account, unfortunately. And it should be. It should be that simple.
But it almost is now. I mean, do you know what? When I first set up Coinbase, for example, my Coinbase account, it must have been a year and a half ago, I think, when I first set it up. It was a lot harder. It wasn't as user-friendly. It wasn't as connected as it was now to banks. And now, though, it's very user-friendly. We just moved on a year down the line, you know? It's a lot. It's literally, you can transfer money as easy as pie. In fact, oddly, you can transfer money in very quickly. Transfer money out. It takes about 5 days. But so that they'll get money in. It's like, you know,
I've noticed a lot of those cryptocurrency sellers work along similar lines. It's going to take a while for us to process your withdrawals, I'm afraid. So, funny, isn't it?
Yeah, funny that. You get ticket as fast as you can with one hand. The other hand is very slow giving it out. it's like working off a different body. I know. So are you saying PayPal don't... or traditional, who don't accept payments on Pornhub? Because obviously you've done a lot more research on Pornhub than me, Glenn. You spent a lot of time just researching it. PayPal doesn't accept
the latest one is PayPal. You know, PayPal, who you'd think are part of the new... Well, they think they're part of the new economy, but they're, you know, being very, very snotty about the whole thing by the looks of it. All right. I might have libeled them there. I'll just take that back very quickly. They're not necessarily being snotty. I don't know what their reasons are exactly, but Pornhub are complaining that PayPal won't process payments for them at the moment. And also, they've got the likes of Visa, MasterCard, JP Morgan Chase, and Stripe have all been seen to stop working with some sex workers on their platforms
It's ironic, isn't it? I bet you ask, most of the people who work at those banks, those companies, say, have you ever been to Pornhub? And I bet they're probably the biggest users of that network, the platform, you know? And some of the bankers probably being called out and making the payments. Cancel all payments. Don't be tempted next time to make a payment.
All the Wall Streeters are busy transferring their cryptocurrencies to Shyla Jennings, Pornhub.
But I think it's quite telling, though, that even the guy, you know, at the forefront, I mean, let's be honest, PayPal is quite clever, isn't it? Because it's not a bank, right? And it's in between, go between the banks and websites, which is very clever. A bank could have done that, right? I suppose it takes an independent sort of company. So they do it digitally, and they're now trusted by... I mean, I've got a one-click payment sort of activity. I don't know, about two clicks, I think. But, I mean, you know, I trust it. A lot of people trust it. You know, it's very trusted in the world. But even he... has got Bitcoin, so obviously he's in the payment space anyway. So he's at least
hedging his bets at the very least. We don't know if he's a true believer or not that he thinks it's definitely going to take over, but certainly he thinks it's a possibility, or he wouldn't have bought the stuff. That's right. I wanted to explain why a central bank digital currency. You know, why are China and Europe and so on all trying to develop central bank digital currencies? Well. Part of the reason is frustration.
Because they can't pay cash on Pornhub. That's why.
That'll be it. Yeah. Part of the reason is frustration, not sexual frustration, but frustration, according to the European Central Bank guy's speech, about the fact that things are moving so slowly in terms of getting fast, cheap, instant payments between people in different countries in Europe. Even within Europe itself, the process can take a while to get money from one person in France to another person in Germany or that kind of thing. And he's frustrated at how slow the development is. He's frustrated that the Americans have been much faster in moving forward with these things. And as a result, all the kind of the biggest companies in this space, like PayPal and like Apple Pay and all of that kind of thing, they're all Americans. And they're basically slowly but surely taking over the European payment system because their apps are quick and easy to use and everybody wants to use them. So he's saying, well, how can we get around this? One way they're trying to get around it is a whole bunch of European banks have got together, including BNP Paribas and a bunch of others. They've got together and they're trying to develop altogether a system where people can transfer money quickly and cheaply to each other. But, you know, that's at an early stage of development. So another route is the central bank digital currency. And the reason why it's significant is because if you have a digital currency that's made and distributed by a central bank, they can actually bypass all the other banks and if they want, the entire banking system. Yeah. So all of that legacy infrastructure, they can just kind of bypass it. Mm. And what you can have, hypothetically, is people having their own bank accounts directly with the central bank. Yeah. So at the moment, we all have bank accounts with normal banks, right? With high street banks. And then those high street banks have their own accounts at the central bank. So it's kind of like they're intermediaries, the banks. Yeah, and this would, a central bank digital currency would allow central banks to cut out the intermediaries altogether and have just you and me just getting our money directly from the central bank after they printed it. You know, they put it into our accounts for whatever reason, you know. I'm trying to think of scenarios here why they'd give us money, but there are all kinds of mechanisms by which we could get paid through the central bank rather than through high street banks, and or indeed put our own money that we get from our jobs, put it into our central bank account. And that way, they could, without that legacy infrastructure, make payments between different people much quicker and much cheaper. And crucially, and this is really at the nub of it, and we've talked about this before, they need to try and stop the dollar being so dominant. And by controlling the money between people in Europe and dealing with people directly, they might be able to stop this march of the Americans and the march of the dollar, which threatens to kind of dominate the entire, well, it already does dominate the entire world's trading system. And therefore, we're all kind of beholden to the dollar and to whatever the US decides to do with its interest rates. And that's why we all care about what the Fed decides at the end of every month, because the US's interest rates affect the US dollar price, and then the US dollar price affects most of the trade in the entire world. And so all these central banks, Mark Carney said it before, European Central Bank saying it, China been saying it, they all want to find ways to cut the dollar at least a little bit out of the equation. And by having their own central bank digital currency, they might be able to do that, and that would be a massive change to the world financial system.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've heard, I don't know if you saw that thing, but it was by Max Heiser, or what his name is, but he's saying that...
Max Heiser, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's saying that China are doing a two-pronged attack. They're buying up gold, and they're setting up a cryptocurrency. And so that way, they'll say, all right, our cryptocurrency is backed fully by gold, and just doing this to undermine the dollar, especially now that, you know, the trade negotiations are going on and it's not going well. They want to really undermine the dollar. So
if they can claim with evidence, I suppose, that it really is backed by gold, if they can say, look, here are our gold reserves, they are worth this much, and our central bank digital currency is, we've issued exactly the same amount as the gold, then effectively they're a gold standard, aren't they? They're like, they'll have a link directly to gold, which the US used to have, but dropped under Nixon in 1971. And ever since then, currencies have been pretty much floating about, doing their own thing. The dollar has been devalued endlessly, as have most other currencies, and that's always annoyed people who believe in hard currency and who want to believe in the integrity of money and the value of money. If China can credibly claim that their new central bank cryptocurrency is backed entirely by gold, then instantly, in many people's eyes, it will become more trustworthy than the dollar.
Yeah, well, the thing is...
And that's big.
Yeah, yeah, well, if you look at the gold, we'll have to finish up now, but if you look at the largest gold reserves, 10 top countries. Now, yeah. China has reported for a while, but they have been buying gold, because they've said they've been buying gold. They've been buying... in fact, they stopped buying last month. They did a 10-month buying spree. Every month they were buying gold. Now, United States at the top there, with the reported 8,100 tons. They got 76% of the world's gold, apparently. No, yeah, reserves? That can't be right. anyway, so 8,100. Then Germany's next with 3,300 tons. Then Italy's next. To Italy, 2,400. France, are fourth, with 2,400. Russia, 2,200. China, at sixth, with just under 2,000 tons of gold. Now, they were saying that they wouldn't be surprised if they had five times that to take them up to 10,000 tons, which is above America. If that's the case, That would be amazing if they said, if they come out with that and said, look what we got! Look what we've been buying on the quiet! I would think that's hilarious, because that would upset the world order, you know, completely as far as, and we got a cryptocurrency! Yay! I would love that if they did that. So,
They'd have all bases covered. They'd be pleasing the gold bugs, the kind of the old-fashioned hard money people, and they'd be pleasing the new economy cryptocurrency people too.
Yeah, I don't put it past them, Chinese. They're very clever like that, but they're very quiet. They do things they don't tell you. You know, they know their maths. I was in school with the guys. I was in school with two guys. It was Charlie and was the guy? I don't know, Derek, I think it was him. But obviously that wasn't the real name. They were from China. But they had, in their sort of A-level maths, they scored, the one got 99% and the one was really annoyed, so he got 98%. And they're like phenomenal at maths, but they know their code. But they get it. I mean, I don't want to bang on about this, but haven't they been oddly promoting their own cryptocurrency but shutting down crypto exchanges recently?
Yes, yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week. Is they're taking with one hand and giving with the other, aren't they? So they're I mean, you know, it's typical of China, really, isn't it? They're all about centralization and they're all about control. So of course they're going to be creating their own special China cryptocurrency that's controlled by the government, and then the decentralized ones, the ones that aren't controlled by them, they're not going to be so keen on. Yeah. So yeah, there's all kinds of rumors about them raiding the headquarters of cryptocurrency companies and that kind of thing. It's all a little bit kind of difficult to discern exactly what's going on at the moment, as is often the case with China, because of media blackouts and so on. But it does seem like they're cracking down on the decentralized cryptocurrency industry, which is not good news for the likes of Bitcoin and so on. But hey, you know, there's the rest of the world. They don't have to base their companies in China. There's plenty of cryptocurrency companies, well, most of them, obviously, outside of China. So,
do you know what they're doing? Do you know what they're doing, though, the Chinese? They're probably accumulating Bitcoin as well, knowing them. They're probably accumulating gold, Bitcoin. They're probably doing a lot.
Quarter every market in the world before
exactly.
You know it.
And they came out, you know, when they've enough of it, they'll just come out and say, look what we got! Bitcoin, gold, and an hour of cryptocurrency. I love that. Marvellous. Thanks for that, Glenn. And we'll speak to you next week, yeah?
Yep. See ya.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Vesarion, VRS, ticker there. At four, Clontarf Energy. Clon is ticker there. Vesarion is up 1%, 99 pence. Clontarf down 11.9% to 0.925. At three, Immipharma up. Ready for it? 243% to 24.25 pence. At two, Velocis. That's VLS ticker up. Just under 1% to 1.43 pence. And Metal Energy up 33.33% to 0.9 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Immipharma. License agreement for Liposor with Avion in the US. That's what sent it rocketing. At four, Extract Resources. Director shareholding, that's Colin Bird buying more stock. He's bought more stock every day for the last few days, I think. Active Energy, first coal switch license agreement awarded. At two, UK Oil and Gas, HH2Z completed all sale. Number one most liked RNS was Valorix, US patent grant, Reval 201, and metastatic cancer. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.